and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here again to talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. And today, I have a very special guest. Her name is Daria Little. She is the author of a new book that's out from Ignatius Press called From Islam to Christ, One Woman's Path Through the Riddles of God. And I wanted to welcome you to the show, Daria.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. I gotta say, we crossed paths when I was sent a manuscript of From Islam to Christ, and I was kind of surprised to see that of all the destinies for my book, By What Authority, the one that I think probably was absolute last in my mind was that it would be read by a Turkish Muslim.
You know, good thing God is in charge, right?
yes. So I thought, okay, well, this is an intriguing story. So I thought it would be great to have you on the show, and you could tell your story. How does someone get from a Muslim background in Turkey to becoming a Catholic? How did you do that?
It's a long and winding path, as you can imagine. But perhaps I should talk about my childhood a little bit, because that's the most important part at the beginning. My parents were nominal Muslims. I don't know how much you're familiar with Turkey, but you know, it's a secular country. It's changing a little bit under the current government, but when I grew up in the 80s, you know, like, you had to be Muslim. It's part of the Turkish identity, but you aren't supposed to be too Muslim, because like, we are not like those other Middle Eastern countries, you know.
That's also part of the Turkish identity, isn't it?
Yes. You know, we are the heirs of the Ottoman Empire. We have that imperial superiority. Mm-hmm. During the summers, I went to the mosque, learned how to read the Quran in Arabic, mm-hmm. and, you know, learned my prayers, learned my, you know,
How many languages do you know?
I used to speak about four, but it's down to Turkish and English now, because I haven't used much. I didn't understand Arabic. It's very common around non-Arabic Muslims. Because Quran was given in Arabic, the mm-hmm. only way you can get Allah's graces or good opinion is if you read it in its original language. That's what's sacred. Yes. I mean, there is nothing, unless you're a scholar, you just don't read it in your vernacular. It just doesn't happen.
So God speaks English as a second language.
Yes, he's not that good, apparently. It's a hard language.
Okay.
Who can blame him? So in the summer I learned about Islam and Quran, and in the winter we would go to public school with our, you know, Western kind of uniform, and learn about secularism and mostly laicism, like the French kind, like the state is above religion. So state governs religious affairs. It's not like separate realms like it is in America. So but still, like, we had religious education classes. I mean, you were raised solidly Muslim, like there was no other options. Mm-hmm. And I never questioned it, to be honest. I mean, I was a nerd from the beginning. I liked reading and such, but it just never occurs to you to question, you know, your faith. Because there's nothing else. We weren't exposed to anything else other than Islam. Mm-hmm. And my parents decided to get it divorced, and it was really messy. So I am around 11 then. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard for me, because I didn't know anybody who got it divorced. Like, it was kind of unheard of where I lived.
Okay.
And you kind
siblings?
Of
lose.
Yes, I have a brother who is 2 years younger than me, who still lives in Turkey.
Okay.
And he dealt with the divorce completely. Like, he played video games all the time. Mm-hmm. But girls weren't allowed in this, like, what do you call them? Those video games places, you know, he played like Street Fighter and stuff. I remember from
like video game parlors. Like, oh, okay. So this wasn't at home. Arcade.
Yeah, an arcade.
Okay.
Yes. I couldn't think of the word. Sorry. But that was his coping mechanism because girls weren't allowed. I don't know if I would be into it, but I was a reader. So I coped by reading. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing for me, I think, was, okay, they lied to me about their love because your whole world revolves around your parents as a kid. What else did they lie to me about?
Right.
That was that kind of shattered my world. Okay.
Right.
You know, it's like nothing else is real, you know? And,
right.
And another thing, I tried to console myself by reading the Quran more often. I prayed and prayed and I just felt this darkness. Like I felt like there was nobody else listening.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this could be due to, I mean, what I was going through. I don't know. It might be spiritual or not, but
right.
Combination of them both, made me for the first time in my life question whether Islam was right and there was a God. It was, of course, it's preteens. I'm going through all kinds of other changes. So for the first time, I started to read about Muhammad, like with a critical eye, because that's never encouraged. You're not allowed to question.
Right.
You're not allowed to doubt. There is like your reason is, it's not something that you're encouraged to use.
Right.
So, that's when I started reading about Muhammad's life. That was the biggest kind of rebellion, as far as Islam was concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but when one starts reading about Muhammad's life with a critical eye, it's kind of, it goes downhill from there.
Right.
You know, and as a woman, it's even worse.
Right.
Right.
And especially as a woman that's been exposed to the West.
Yes, it's kind of, yeah.
I'm sorry, we're getting kind of a feedback from a speaker. It sounds like there's a speaker.
Okay, I have the headset and I have the microphone. I mean, maybe it was too near to my mouth.
Could be, I don't know.
Better?
Yeah, that seems better now. Yeah, I'm not getting the feedback now. So.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Yes, it's raw, unedited, real life podcasting out on the edge.
So, yes, warts and all.
Warts and all.
So you read about
Muhammad, which is not edifying reading, a lot of times. You know, one of the things that I think is intriguing, is in the last 2 centuries, scripture has been subjected to just incredibly rigorous historical criticism and form criticism and all of that, and has weathered that. Nothing like that exists for the Quran, as far as I know. I mean, I really wonder how the Quran will survive an encounter with that kind of scholarship.
I am not sure if it would, and I think that's one of the reasons guarded very well.
Yeah.
And you cannot read the Quran without the Hadith, because it's not a story. I don't know if you ever read it in English. It's very kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not linear. Like, you know, you can pick up the Bible. You can pretty much read it from beginning to end, and there is like a storyline.
Right.
Quran, that way, it's all over the place. It kind of, these verses became revealed whenever Muhammad needed something. So it's really, and it's not consistent. I mean, I don't think it would stand against textual criticism. And that's one of the reasons it's very, there's no such thing as freedom of speech.
Can you explain for my audience what the Hadith is?
Hadith is everything basically Muhammad said and did. So after his passing, everybody he knew, this is the tradition, they were questioned about his the way of behaving, the stuff he said, and then it's like a compilation of his life story. And so because Quran is a little hard to interpret, everybody says, okay, Muhammad is the perfect person, he's the ideal man, then we can follow him, and then that's how we can please Allah, by emulating Muhammad.
Okay. So you sort of, you read Quran through the lens of Hadith then?
Yes, you have to, because as I said, there isn't, I mean, you think sola scriptura in Christianity causes trouble. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know?
Right, yeah. Okay.
So, but I think the biggest thing for me, two things were really important for me, but the biggest thing was the treatment of women, mm-hmm. and then the violence. Because the way we were taught Muslim history, it's like this glorious, victorious history, mm-hmm. and that Muhammad never waged a war of aggression, and you know, so, mm-hmm. and then you start reading it, it's like, that's not even true, and you don't even have to read anything outside. You read the Hadith, and then you realize, no, this is a war of aggression, you know,
right.
And the treatment of women, I mean, I think many people are really aware of it now. So those were the two things that made me realize, look, I cannot follow this man.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned my back to Islam.
Okay.
Yeah, I was maybe 12,
okay.
if that.
Okay. That's often, you know, it's around those ages that people often make those kinds of decisions. And in the Christian world too, you know, I think it's part of the, you know, it's part of what you do as an adolescent is you're making up your mind about these things. And so you rejected Islam and then what?
Well, the only God I knew was Allah.
Mm-hmm.
And, because what we were taught was Allah sent, Moses, and Jews, corrupted his teachings. Then Allah sent Jesus. Then Christians corrupted his teachings, changed the Bible, the holy book. And then Allah sent Muhammad. So to me, they're all the same. So because it's
okay.
the same, you know, it's the same God.
Right.
And I don't want to follow him. I turned atheist, basically. I didn't even look at any other thing.
Okay.
A few friends of mine, they were kind of flirting with Buddhism, but it kind of really sounded silly to me. It really, mm-hmm. you know, to ears of a former Muslim, it sounds really silly.
Mm-hmm.
So I became an atheist, and I started to live like an atheist. I kind of really had a messed up adolescence, and I stayed that way until I converted over 10 years later.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm 19, going to a good university in Turkey, and family is broken. I haven't had any contact with my father, so I need money. And I find this lady who wants to learn Turkish, American lady.
Mm-hmm.
So at our first meeting, she opens the door, and right across the entryway, I mean, this is a Muslim country, it should tell something about this lady to you. There's a verse from the Bible framed. It's, I think it's Acts, I think 4:12, or is it 3:12, 4:12. It's like, there's no salvation under, on earth other than Jesus. Basically,
uh-huh.
that's what it says. I'm like, oh, poor lady, I would like to save you from this fairy tale. Let me help you. I mean, you know, I'm 19.
I was going to say, an American who wants to learn Turkish, I'm betting she's a missionary.
Yes. Yes. Of course, you don't say that. I mean, missionary, they still, like, in your correspondence, you cannot use the M word. I mean, we say M word. Like, you can't even say it. It has such a bad connotation.
Okay.
Yeah, so I didn't know, right? So I wanted to help her. Because I figured everything out by then. So let me enlighten you with everything I've learned for 19 years.
Okay.
You know? So little did I know, she's a convert herself. she was a five-point Calvinist. I think she's maybe went down 3 points since then. But no improvements, right? For 3 years, we talked about God and Jesus and everything in between. I saw her twice a week. It was really heated. But at the end of 3 years, there are two things she explained to me. The most important was that God might exist, you know. And this God is the God she was talking about, and I hear we might disagree on this, was very different from Allah, because the God she was talking about is a rational being, and he's loving and he's pure. Like, he's sinless in that sense, you know, he's pure and he can't look upon sin. So this was a completely different concept, because, you know, my God was science, but he had shown me that science is useless when it comes to proving God's existence. Like, it's not, that's not science's job.
Right.
And the God she was talking about was compatible with science, whereas in Islam, you really don't need science in a way, because if it was important enough, Allah would have told you about it. And if it's not important, then that means you don't need to know, so don't worry about it. And that's, I think, one of the reasons Muslim countries are lagged behind in that area.
There's a guy named Michael Flynn, who he's an interesting guy. I think you'd enjoy him. He's a by day a statistician and by night a science fiction writer. And kind of dabbles in sort of the history of science, and he wrote a couple of essays that are on his website, basically talking about why the sciences originated in medieval Latin Europe. And one of the points that he makes a couple of points. He says, for science to arise, you need two things. The first thing you need is a metaphysic that says that the universe makes sense, that that there are laws that govern the universe. Because if you don't start with that assumption, you're not going to try and understand why the universe makes sense, which is what science is about, right? So if you live, for example, in ancient Sumeria, where the gods are just kind of crazy and just do bizarre things because who knows why, you're not going to try to develop the sciences, because there's nothing to understand. The gods are crazy. The universe is crazy. Who knows why it floods sometimes? You know, it just does, right? And so that's the first thing you need, is a sort of a fundamental metaphysical conviction that the universe is lawful because God is lawful. But you also need something else. And so the first conviction, in a certain sense, is something that Christianity and Islam share. But the second conviction is something that Christianity had and Islam didn't, according to Flynn. And it was the belief that creatures could directly affect one another. So the image that was used in Islamic philosophy to express this was when the match touches the edge of the paper. The Christian conviction was the flame is burning the paper, and that's why the paper's turning black, is because the creature called fire is affecting the creature called paper. Islam took the turn of saying, no, creatures don't, that would be taking glory from God. So what's really happening is Allah wills that the paper turns black as the flame touches it. So it's Allah is doing everything directly. And if you've got, and if you have that conviction, you're also not going to do science, because who can penetrate the mind of Allah? So it's, you know, these things happen because God makes them happen, but if he decides they're not going to happen, then they won't. And so there's no point trying to figure out the connection between creatures, because there are no connections between creatures. God is controlling everything. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting when he pointed that out. And if you have those two convictions, then science can start. And the place where those convictions were found turned out to be medieval Latin Europe. And that's why the sciences were born there. So anyway, interesting. But I don't mean to detract from your story. So
no, but it was important for me. In my mind, when I was in my early 20s, to see that, look, we can understand this God because he can create a universe that can interact with each other. You know, mm-hmm. the fire and the paper.
Right.
Like he can create that law, and it could be like very important things for me. It would be consistent all over the universe.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, the fire burns here on Earth, but in a different solar system, it's going to rust. I don't know. You know.
Right.
So it's like no, but it's consistent, and that's what the more I read, like I was again, I was a geek. So the more I read, I realized like there is no reason for this consistency unless there is a God,
mm-hmm.
a constant creator. You know.
Right.
So. But then that wasn't the end of my road because I thought, okay, you're saying if there is a benevolent creator, why is there so much evil?
Right.
And that was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
And, because I didn't understand sin and free will. Again, these concepts are very fluid mm-hmm. in Islam because sin is a sin, because Allah says so. Murder is sin today. Well, some murder and it might not be sin tomorrow because that's how Allah feels like it. So the sin does not have the same effect
right.
as breaking the relationship between God and man.
Right.
But if you don't have that, then why do you need Christ? So like to a Muslim mind, it's ridiculous. It's like, why would Christ have to die? Allah can just, you know, forgive everybody's sins if he wants to,
right.
or not.
Right.
Just, you know, it's his whim, like it's his will. It's to them, it's limiting God by saying that no, there needs to be a sacrifice because
right.
God cannot look upon sin.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's like, no, you're limiting God to your, you know, to your way. So there's like a big difference of paradigm there.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't cross it until yet again another American who was teaching us advanced English when I was in college, mm-hmm. and he was a Buddhist.
Oh, really?
And he assigned, yes. Yes. Not all Americans are Christians, Mark.
No. I get that. You don't say. I live in Seattle where hardly anybody is a Christian.
I know. More miracle to find one there than in Turkey.
Yeah.
So he assigned us this chapter from Brothers Karamazov of Dostoevsky.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Grand Inquisitor. I don't know if you've ever read it, but mm-hmm. It deals with this, I want to say, corrupt cardinal, of course. And then Christ comes to earth, and this cardinal imprisons Christ. He's just visiting. It's not the second coming.
Right.
And this cardinal tells Christ what he did during his temptation in the desert. He tells him, look, you should have taken what Satan offered you because these men you've created do not understand you. You wanted them to love you freely, but all they want is earthly security and earthly bread where you offered them heavenly bread.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like you read this and it was an old translation. My English wasn't good. It was painful. Lots of cups of coffee. And in the middle of the night, I'm sitting there. I'm like, that's why there is evil. It's because we are sinful. Like, right. It's kind of funny that it never occurred to me that my sin affects other and other sin affects me. And this is like, this is a collective sinful being, you know, yeah. It's for the first time I understood, and then also I understood free will. Like God wants us to love Him.
Huh.
It's not a master-slave relationship.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's that father and child, and He wants us to love Him freely. Mm-hmm. You know, He doesn't want to force us. Like my whole conversion experience, it was always a whisper. He's a gentleman, you know, like he doesn't force himself upon us. He's like, you know, come and love me, you know, freely. So, but then I couldn't make up my mind because, you know, again, I said, I'm in a good university. I am on track to get a really good government job. But if I become a Christian, then I will be considered a basically traitor to Turkey. I mean, our security clearances don't come clean. It's that, you know, it's that identity problem.
Right.
And I couldn't make up my mind. And, you know, I had a fiance back then and all these 80s friends, you know, all these worries, earthly worries that I'm thinking about. And I was like, I don't think I can do this. So I'm in this agony going to class one day, one morning, early morning. So I had this vision. I call it a vision because I don't think, I think Holy Spirit just kind of had enough of me. And he was like, okay. Just make up your mind, you know. So I had this picture of this little girl in outdoors. She's sitting on the ground and playing with these little toys in her lap. You can't even see the toys, what she's playing with. And these two hands come from the sky, and they're holding this beautiful gift. And it's beautifully wrapped. It's glowing, and it's just, you see that it's like otherworldly. It's something you cannot even imagine. You don't quite know what's inside, but you know it's priceless. She doesn't even see for a long time that this gift is being given to her. And finally, when she sees, she looks up at the owner of the hands, who cannot be seen because he's so big. He says, no, I have these little things to play with. I'm like, are you stupid? No. How can you even compare? How can you even compare? So, and then I realized, of course, that's me. You know, I'm thinking about my career, my friends, my boyfriend. But like this gift Christ has been offering me for years and years and years that I didn't see is will change my life eternally. And it did finally the following day. I became a Christian and prayed the prayer and all, you know, all that Protestant stuff. So.
I did the same thing. I'm also a convert from evangelicalism.
Yeah, hence the book.
Oh, that's right. You did that.
yes, I did. So I become Protestant, and also I should tell you that Catholic Church is a big no-no, of course, in Turkey. You know, all the bad stuff come from the Catholic Church.
Right.
So I never even, you know, heard anything about it. But as I learned more about Protestant theology, I realized there were some things that just didn't make sense, like sola scriptura, sola fide, leg of a magisterium. And up until that time, I was really like into believing evolution. And then the Protestants I hung out with, it was, they were creationists. And I was like, okay, so our whole belief system will come down if evolution is proved beyond doubt one day. Like,
right.
Does it make sense? That didn't quite make sense to me. Like, why couldn't God use evolution? You know, so there, so there was some problems, but I thought I just didn't know enough about Christianity to answer the questions because I was such a new believer. But then a good friend of mine went and did the unthinkable, and he became a Catholic. So
also a Turk or?
No, actually, no, he was what we call a third culture kid. He was a, he grew up in Turkey, American, but he was a missionary, like his parents were missionaries in Turkey.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but we were working together at this teenager camp together for years. We've become good friends, and, you know, we meet for lunch. We lived in different cities. We meet for lunch, and it's like my roommate, who is an agnostic slash atheist kind of person, was there. And he told me he became a Catholic, and we like almost had a fight during lunch because I am so appalled. Like it's the utter betrayal because, you know, it's like, you know, they worship Mary and, you know, everything you basically, your average Protestant kind of objects, like the Pope is the Antichrist. They changed the Christ, they changed Christ's teaching. And this, my, you know, friend who is like, doesn't believe in anything, watching these Christians kind of go at each other, which has happened in history many times, I suppose. But so anyway, we kind of, we agreed to disagree, went our separate ways. I come home and I go to the library of my university. I'm like, okay, I'm going to read about this Catholic stuff. So I pull out this only book on theology. It's written by this guy named Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. I don't know who that is, but I will prove him wrong. I still know everything, okay? I may be just like, you know, 25, but clearly. So I open this book. It's in English. I had no idea, like, what he was talking about. It was such a humbling experience. So I'm like, I kind of respectfully closed the book and put it back. Like, it's just, I was like, okay, maybe in 30 years I might know what he's talking about. Because I had no, you know, kind of background information.
Right.
So I go to my room and, my friend sent me, who became Catholic, the traitor, sent me this book, your book with the, and he wrote, it's a, like, so that you know that I haven't gone completely insane or completely crazy. And your book looks really readable after Cardinal
Ratzinger. Okay. Well, yes, not writing on Ratzinger's level, definitely.
Well, you have a little ways to go, but I think – but – so, I mean, but it was perfect because you addressed everything that bugged me.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, because like it's the same kind of, journey from yours to my, it's different places, but mm-hmm. you know, we were kind of spiritually in the same place.
Yeah.
And that was a big start. It wasn't like, okay, I read your book and now I'm Catholic, but it just helped me a lot. And you use the scripture, you know, because mm-hmm. you're kind of talking to the protesters. I'm like, that's true. That always bugged me, you know, and then it was perfect. It was simple and it was short, you know,
Good.
It was just perfect. And that's how it started. And 2 years later, I mean, I'm getting confirmed into the Catholic Church. And, again, I was wrong. Moment times can one be wrong in life.
Well, being Catholic is a long process of learning how wrong you are about things.
Exactly.
Oh, wonderful. So it took you about 2 years after you read By What Authority. Let me ask you, was Mary a huge issue for you?
You know, so many people ask me this, but it's funny because, you know, you look at Mary from a place like Turkey. Mm-hmm. And first of all, of course, if Christ is God, of course he's going to revere his mother. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, in our culture, even though women are, you know, second class, everybody reveres their mother. You know, it's just different. So as sinners, if we can understand that importance, of course God would. So that wasn't. And also, look how much respect she's given. A respect that no Muslim woman would get. Even Aisha, you know, the Muhammad's wife, who is really revered. And she's mm-hmm. mentioned a lot in the Quran. And I think through her intercession, there will be a conversion of Muslims. And I think it will be through her intercession. It's just, you know.
Well, you know, it's the reason I asked is because years ago, like 20 years ago, I used to work for a website called Catholic Exchange, and it fell to me to handle the mail that we got. And I got a letter one day from a Turkish guy, and he wrote and he wanted to know about becoming Catholic. And his reasoning, which I found really intriguing, was that as somebody from a Muslim background, he had been taught to revere Mary. And Protestants didn't revere Mary, so they were out. And Greek Orthodox were out because they're Greek. And so that left Catholics. And in his mind. And I've never forgotten that correspondence that I had, and that was my curiosity was, you know, did your Muslim background affect your view of Mary?
Positively. I mean, I never gave
positively. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yes. I mean, yeah, weirdly enough, I never gave any thought to her, to be honest, when I was a Protestant, but, once I became Catholic, it helped me it helped me a lot because we called her Mariam Ana, like Mother Mary. Mm-hmm. I mean, why would you call that? She's just another prophet's mother. I mean, she's mentioned more than Jesus in mm-hmm. the Quran.
You really? Know? Interesting.
Yes. So it's like, I think, that's why I think she will be the way, because that's something common. In a way, common, like, it's unlikely common between Islam and, Catholicism. That's this reverence to Our Lady and, you know, all she needs to do kind of appear like about 100 times. And I think things will be better in the Muslim world.
Well, she appeared Zaitun in Egypt. In 1968, there was a Marian apparition to Muslims.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really weird thing. Yeah, it's spelled Zeitoun. If you look it up, it's one of the stranger Marian apparitions. I think that it's the genuine article. So I was just curious about that. So you entered the church. When did you come into the church then?
2008, Easter.
Okay.
Yes, 2008 Easter. I don't know why I had to think. Yes. Okay. But I was in England because I moved there to get my PhD.
Okay.
The only reason it took 2 years, I went to an RCIA in Turkey and then in England like twice.
Okay.
That's why. Waited for a long time.
Everybody has, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people. I'm one of them who had like multiple RCIA experiences because of one thing or another. So you go through RCIA and then you don't come into the church because of something. And then, so you do it again. And then, you know, that's so you were received into the church in England then.
Yes, yes, okay. I was. I moved there in September of 2007 and received in that Easter.
Wonderful, wonderful. And what's your doctorate in, if you don't mind my asking?
Political science, politics.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, it's an interesting time to be alive then, isn't it?
Yes. It's so interesting. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I just don't want to read anymore.
Yeah, you know? I hear you. But you came here to the States.
Yes.
I think the guy you were engaged to in Turkey is not the guy that you married.
No, he's not. I wish, you know, it happened to others, and I wish it did. But he became very hostile. I talk about it in the book in depth. He became very hostile, even though he was such an amiable guy, and we broke up eventually. I mean, I'd say 6-7 months into me becoming a Christian. So,
yeah.
But you know, I met my husband on Catholic Match while I was in England.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, he's a convert too from Lutheranism. So it's been perfect.
Wonderful, wonderful. Where can people find your book?
Well, of course, Ignatius.com and all the other booksellers, even the one that starts with A. So,
okay.
Yeah. Go by and leave reviews, please.
Good, good. You've been a Catholic for coming up on 10 years now.
Yes.
And I'm curious, what have you learned since becoming a Catholic?
A lot. I learned about St. Thomas, which is a, you know, it's always a constant learning. I'm always amazed. And, I feel like the Catholic Church, this is what I feel like. When I became a Christian, I feel like I, like, went into the water in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, kind of could only swim on the surface. But when I became a Catholic, now suddenly I could dive in. Mm. And there is, like, riches. Because, I mean, the Catholic theology is so deep, so rich. And there's, if I have a question, I know that there's somebody else who asked and thought about the most stupid question I could ever come up with, you know. So it's this wonderful learning experience.
Yeah.
And And I feel like I also really like the communion of saints, you know, of living and dead. And like, I feel like, you know what? This is the real church. We are all united. Death cannot separate us. And, you know, I just feel that very strongly as well. So the learning continues.
Yes, indeed. And will continue for the rest of your life, which and beyond, you know, presumably, you know, I suppose there must be like new things to learn in heaven all the time. I wonder what they'll be.
Hopefully we shall see.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on Connecting the Dots today. You've been listening to Daria Little. She is the author of From Islam to Christ, One Woman's Path Through the Riddles of God. You can find it at Ignatius.com. You can go to Amazon and check it out. It's a really fascinating story. Daria, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for writing that book.
Oh, my pleasure and an honor. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we will be back again in the future. Till then, have a wonderful time. Bye-bye.